Craig Manazzi is joining us in the studio this morning. He grew up in the Nashwauk area. He became a school superintendent in Minnesota and Iowa, and he has retired to Coleraine, and today is joining us. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Heidi. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's hear a little bit about your background. First of all, how were Nashwauk schools for you growing up?
Well, growing up here in the 1960s and graduating from Nashwauk Keewatin High School in 1974 was just a great experience. I have fond memories of living up here and growing up here, and it was just a wonderful place to live and grow up. And it's great to be living back in the area now full time, and I have a real fondness for the Iron Range and for Iron Range schools.
Kari Hedlund's going to be joining our conversation as well.
Morning.
Thanks for coming in. So let's hear a little bit about your experiences being a superintendent.
Well, I had wonderful experiences. I spent 33 years of my professional career in Twin Cities school districts, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, Lakeville, New Prague. And then the last 4.5 years of my career, I spent as superintendent of schools at the Southeast Polk Community Schools, a large suburban district just east of Des Moines. I did my undergraduate work at Gustavus Adolphus College, and then I did my advanced degrees at the University of Minnesota and at St. Thomas University. But I absolutely loved being a superintendent. I loved creating a vision for the organization and working within the system and everything to grow student achievement. That's really my passion as a superintendent, is to improve student learning and increase student achievement for all learners. So I had the opportunity to really do that both in Minnesota and in Iowa.
Well, and I grew up in the Minnesota school system and feel proud of what I achieved or what I got through that system. Is it a big difference between Iowa and Minnesota?
You know, I think both states really take a lot of pride in education, both in Minnesota and in Iowa. The big difference between our states is really how we fund schools. School finance is really a complicated topic in all states. I have a son currently who is a business manager for a Twin Cities school district. So when I was in Iowa, I had to kind of keep my Minnesota hat on when we talked Minnesota finance and my Iowa hat on. One of the things that we had in Iowa that was really, I think, very, very good for school districts was that we had a 1 cent sales tax to pay for things like infrastructure, technology, school buses. So as a superintendent in Minnesota, one of the things you get very involved in is passing the local operating referendums. That, you know, if you're going to have a local vote in November, you're going to spend 4 or 5 months, and that's really what you're going to do, is doing presentations and getting the word out on those referendums. But in Iowa, we didn't have to do that as much because that penny sales tax paid for a lot of those kinds of things. For example, in Iowa City Public Schools, you know, Iowa City is a community of about 100,000 people, and they built an elementary once that was about $18 million, and they did it completely through their 1 cent sales tax. So that was new in that we didn't have to pass those referendums, you know, as often as they did in Minnesota.
We are talking with Craig Manazzi this morning. He's a retired superintendent.
Well, and I was just going to add that exact topic seems to be a big one in throughout the nation right now, just because infrastructure is at a point where it is needing a lot of assistance, mm-hmm. or the vision needs to be changed a little bit for what buildings these students are in, because teaching has changed so much in the last 10 years even. So did you find do other states work like that? I've never heard of that 1 cent.
I think that is pretty unique to Iowa.
Yeah.
It really is. But, you know, again, it really enables you to do a lot of those infrastructure projects. In large districts, it's not unheard of that you're going to buy 3 to 5 school buses a year, and those school buses run about $100,000 a piece. And technology is not cheap either, you know, mm-hmm. to buy the hardware and all of that. It really allows you to, you know, purchase additional computers, you know, house your schools with technology and everything too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, education, finance, our Minnesota's governor, Dayton, really has a fondness for mm-hmm. pre-K and early childhood education. What are you following in terms of what's going on in the Minnesota legislature right now?
You know, that's one thing. I'm glad you brought that up, both of you, because one of the things that we did have in Iowa that was a difference is that we had four-year-old pre-K for every child. So four-year-old preschool was fully paid by the state, and for a long time now, and just recently we've had that in Minnesota, was five-year-old every day, all-day kindergarten was provided. So we had that in Iowa, which was really wonderful. In fact, we had the preschools in almost all of our elementary for the four-year-olds. Right now, I'm following the funding in Minnesota with the legislature set to adjourn here on May 22nd. I know for the next 2 years, Governor Dayton has proposed 2% and 2% for funding. And I think the latest with the state legislature, I think they're at about 1.5 and 1.5. So that's a difference they're going to have to work out here in the next 2 weeks as come to an agreement. As an advocate for school funding, I always say about half the reason we send our legislators to St. Paul, about half the budget is K-12 education and higher education. So that's a big, big part of the budget and an important part of the budget. So continue to advocate for school funding and make sure that our schools are funded adequately. I think we're doing great work right now. One of the things about just recently leaving the profession, although I'm working part-time as a consultant, is that I think we're doing great work in schools. I think for so long, when I was working in schools in the 70s and 80s, maybe there wasn't a lot of change, but I see recently some real positive change, changes that really are improving student learning. I think instructional techniques are getting better. I think professional development is getting better. And I have some marvelous stories of school districts in a district I recently worked in where we really made marvelous advances to student learning. So that was one of my sad moments of leaving the profession right now, as I see really good work going on. I'm learning about some really good work going on here on the Iron Range that I want to continue to learn more about in terms of things that are being provided for students. So I think it's really, really been positive, and I think there's a lot of change going on right now in public education. So it was a profession that maybe for the longest time didn't change a lot, but there is a lot of change happening right now.
So in thinking of all of the infrastructure needs throughout our area specifically, looking at northern Minnesota, lots of rural areas, mm-hmm. Which is meaning there's a lot of consolidation between schools. Yeah. But also there are other communities that are looking at fewer schools with larger student populations. What is your thought on that versus a smaller, like for primary schools, yeah. let's say?
You know, it's interesting, Kari, with consolidation. I became familiar with consolidation back in 1963 mm-hmm. when Nashwauk and Keewatin consolidated. Mm-hmm. My father was on the school board in the late 1950s when that happened, and it was unheard of back then. I think one of the things, I hope this gets at your question, that I think we really need to do are shared services. I think shared services between school districts, many times, and this is something Heidi and I can talk about in the future, is that there are teacher shortages, but I think there are things that maybe we can't hire that chemistry teacher for all school districts, but with technology, we can bring that chemistry class to a couple different districts at the same time. But I think one of the things that taxpayers really want us to be doing are things like shared services. When I was in Iowa, we handled like the technology for one of our local cities. Technology people did the technology for the city. We also did the payroll, things like that. And I know that communities want to hang on to their local school district for as long as they can, because many times if you lose that school, you know, that community is going to really suffer and everything too. Right. We had that happen in Iowa. We had a school in one of our more rural communities called Mitchellville. It was a town with a lot of poverty. And the school board decided we weren't going to close that school. So we renovated that building. We brought in additional students there. So I think it should start with shared services. I think as long as we can hold on to the school, we should. But sometimes it becomes really hard, money-wise, to really keep smaller schools open. I mean, mm-hmm. schools that run with less than 200 students and things like that are really hard economically to be efficient.
What is, if you could say an ideal number, what would you say for size school?
Well, a lot of people might disagree with this, but I've been working with some school districts lately that really have to look at potentially closing some schools because they get really small. I don't mind larger elementary schools, because I think the research says that a larger school still, I think the student achievement doesn't really go down if a school is larger. I think there's some ways that we can do things, even in like a middle school level with smaller learning communities and things like that, to still advance student achievement. So I wouldn't want to see anything really less than a two-section school. So mm-hmm. 320 students would be certainly the minimum I would look at. And with that being said, it gets harder and harder to economically keep those schools open because, you know, you still need the food service, you still need the clerical, you still need the custodial, things like that. Most of the schools that I opened recently as a superintendent were 750 students. And some people might cringe at that. But the research really doesn't say that, you know, even as you get larger, that student achievement goes down in those larger elementary schools. And they were much more effective, you know, economically to open.
Craig, you mentioned how Iowa had, it was four-year-old education was paid for, preschool. How does that, why do you think that is good? I know, I mean, one of the things we talk about a lot, or I've talked with Marshall Helmberger, who lives up in the Tower area, is there's lack of daycare mm-hmm. for people, especially in rural areas. And then that is affecting their school enrollments because they're having to bring their kids for daycare to bigger towns like mm-hmm. Virginia. And then they end up staying in those school districts because they know those kids. And so how does all of that work together, getting the kids at 4 years old? And if Minnesota were to have something like that, how could it change things?
Oh, I just think that early childhood and having that opportunity with four-year-olds and making sure that they have a viable curriculum. And I think that's the key too, that it is more than childcare. There is a curriculum there for four-year-old preschool. And I think today we're learning that so many children just aren't kindergarten ready. And so having that program available, you know, even in our rural areas, I think is just gonna pay such dividends for the children and for the future. And I think we learn now too that the bang for the buck on early childhood and preschool is just so great that we find out that there's really a seven times return on that money, where if we don't invest in early childhood, many times we're seeing a lot of those children later on when they're adults getting into the, you know, criminal justice system and things like that. So I really think that if we really look at it, there really is a great opportunity to do that and to provide that. And I think so many of our children in so many of our outstate areas just aren't provided that. And I think it gives them the jump start on kindergarten, which I think they all need. So I would be a big, big proponent on passing universal four-year-old preschool for all children in the state.
So here's a curveball of a question. Do you think kids are not ready for kindergarten? More kids are not ready for kindergarten now, or they're not ready for the kindergarten that is today versus the kindergarten that was 25 years ago? Because expectations have certainly changed as well.
Well, Kari, I just met you, but that is a great question. It really is, because you know, truly today, if you go into a second grade classroom, you're truly seeing what used to be fourth grade work.
Right.
There's no doubt. And the kindergarten of today is not just recess-oriented, nap-oriented, and play-oriented. I mean, it is much more academic. Mm-hmm. So the kids really do need a really, really good preschool. I have a grandchild right now, a boy, who will not be entering kindergarten until the fall of 2018. And I've talked to my son and daughter-in-law that he really does need a really good pre-K program next year for his skills to really allow him to be ready, because he really is ready for that. So yes, the kindergarten of today is not what it used to be, so that we've got to make sure those kids are ready for it, and they do need those preschool opportunities. One of the things we're also seeing today is there are more and more three-year-olds now being identified with special education needs. There just are so many more, and the rise in the number of kids identified for special education is on the rise in the state too.
That's Craig Manazzi. We are talking with him about education. He works as a consultant to schools. He's retired school superintendent, has recently moved back to northern Minnesota area, and we hope to have more and more conversations. We'd love to hear from you. If you have questions you would like us to pose to Craig, you can email us at comments@kexe.org. What are some of the things you want to talk about in the future with us, Craig?
Well, I think there's a lot of topics that I listed. I would love to talk about how schools with low income, with children with low incomes in their family and kids in poverty can still achieve. And I've got some success stories I'd love to share with your listeners. I'd love to talk about the focus of the American high school, and I think what the focus really needs to be. I'd also like to talk more about the federal government funding of special education. I'd like to talk about that whole topic of special ed. I'd like to talk about essential characteristics that I see for leaders, probably not only leaders in schools, but leaders in our community. What I see are some essential topics. The importance of long-range planning for school districts. And then what I see as the priorities for a superintendent and priorities for the Board of Education. I'd love to talk about those a little bit. Charter versus public schools. Mm-hmm. Customized learning, personal learning plans. I go on and on. Standards-based grading, one-to-one technology initiatives, more and more diversity in schools, and then teacher shortages. I think there's about a dozen topics there, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about, kind of how the how it is changing now for leaders and how the focus today maybe is different for leaders today than maybe it was 20 years ago.
It must have been difficult for you to retire.
It was. It really was. It was hard. And when Heidi says I'm a retired superintendent, I'm like, oh, I still want to be active in the field. So it is hard because I love the profession, and it wasn't something where I was just ready to retire and I had to go because I loved what I was doing.
Is there an aspect of education you would say you're the most passionate about?
You know, I'm not a human relations or a business person. I'm most passionate about taking the funds and providing fiscal integrity for a district, but all at the same time advancing student learning. So student achievement is certainly my passion and making sure the kids are learning. So I'm excited to share a story with you about a school in poverty that really did work and kids really did learn too.
Well, we'll do that the next time. Don't forget, we want you to get involved with us as well. Send us your questions, comments at kaxe.org. That's Craig Manazzi, first of many conversations, we hope.